Hello, and welcome to another episode of Zero Knowledge, or the Zero Knowledge Podcast. I don't really know what to call it yet. Either just Zero Knowledge or Zero Knowledge Podcast.
I'm so glad we now have a name for it. Today is kind of a special episode because we're actually going to be speaking with another fellow Parody employee. And this time we wanted to do something kind of more general. We wanted to look back at 2017 and then also do a little bit of looking forward at 2018.
So on the line with us, we have one of the most important core developers at Parody, I would say, Marek.
Hello.
Marek, do you want to tell the Zero Knowledge audience a little bit about yourself?
Okay, so I originally heard about Ethereum in 2013, at the end of 2013. And since then, I've been excited about the space. And I started contributing to the Ethereum project in early 2014, and then joined full-time in September 2014. And since then, I've been a member of the space, and initially working for the Ethereum Foundation, and since the end of 2015, for Parity Technologies.
Very cool. Old school.
I guess I can start with my view of 2017. I joined Parity in the middle of 2017, so I don't have a lot of insights from the first half of the year of what happened like in the company, but I've been following the space for the whole year. So, I mean, one obvious thing is the enormous price increase. But aside from that, I think there's been some interesting technological developments. So we had the Byzantium hard fork bringing in some new encryption primitives, especially. And I'm really, really excited to see like Zcash getting more attention and just generally zero knowledge proofs getting more attention and getting more real world applications. And what we were hearing about zero knowledge proofs for a long time is that they're like this unknown entity. We don't really know if it works. It's new encryption tech and like blah, blah, blah. Now, like, it's been in production, like it's holding a ton of value and like it's working. Obviously, like you can, it's still relatively new, but seeing it get as much attention as it has been exciting for me. Generally, in the blockchain space, we saw Bitcoin Cash come out, which is a big thing. It's still really interesting to me to see how that's going to play out. Bitcoin Cash offers a lot of like new stuff, and Marek, you were in their latest dev meeting, so maybe you can talk a bit more about what their roadmap is for 2018.
Definitely. So regarding Bitcoin Cash, there was a meeting happening a few weeks ago where the authors of different Bitcoin implementation discussed the future of Bitcoin Cash and what should be done in the first place. So basically, we've agreed on several things, starting from further block size increase. So in the next release of Bitcoin Cash, the block size will be increased to 32 megabytes. It sounds like a lot, but it doesn't mean that every block has to be 32 megabytes. It means that at the peak, the blocks will be capable of having 32 megabytes of transactions.
Just a quick question on that. Has there been any... So the main argument against bigger blocks, obviously, is that it requires more bandwidth on the nodes and blah, blah, blah. You can't have the same distributed type of network. Has there been any sort of analysis made now that we have 8 meg blocks? I mean, we have data. We can say, has the network grown larger or smaller? Does it require bigger nodes? Or like, was there any talk about that?
So there was an analysis made by Andrew Stone, who is a core developer of Bitcoin Unlimited. And he made an analysis where he checked what's the limit of the block size and how the blocks are being propagated in the network if we increase the block size. I can't exactly remember the numbers, but the The outcome of this analysis was that like Bitcoin should be able to handle even a few hundred megabyte blocks, and we should not be afraid to increase the block size. So
I should try to find that that article and
I'll
link it in the show notes.
That. I've read a long time ago. So yeah, there was some kind of some analysis, and you know, there were different opinions whether or not this is a good analysis. There are people, especially on the Bitcoin core side, arguing that it's not true, and the assumptions are wrong. But
I think we can just if we link the article, people can make up their minds on their own whether or not it's a valid analysis. But I think what I'm most interested in is whether or not there has been any analysis at all. I mean, like I said, there is no data. We can research this. So it's good to hear that that's been worked on, at least.
Merrick, what else do you remember? What was your memory of 2017? What are the biggest things that happened, in your opinion?
The biggest, I think we got, the blockchain space got more... and became more attractive for investors, and because of the price increase, and you know, it was just like the price increased so fast that you know, a lot of people who were not so interested in a space before became interested and started talking about the blockchain space, and this brought a lot of interest from developers who were not familiar with the crypto space before. So I kind of think that the price of the Bitcoin and Ethereum is irrelevant. That like, as we get more talented people in a space, we also have a bigger variety of solutions that may be, you know, which may be useful in future.
What were those, like, definitely, I mean, so from where I'm sitting, also having started a parody later, like halfway through the year, basically, as I started to get more excited about the space, I saw all these friends in tech and other industries really starting to pay attention. We all knew about the space for a long time, but it was just like one of many exciting spaces. And this year it seems like it became the exciting space. All of these conferences started to like put their programming right around this topic. You had more and more self-proclaimed blockchain experts pop out of your group of friends. That was really interesting. I wonder from where you are sitting, because you have been in it for such a long time, like, do you, what, like, not only have talented people come in, but what has really changed for you? Like, what does it look like?
Okay, so in my, maybe in my personal life, people who are never into crypto or never into tech or have heard about crypto space before but were skeptical about it are now very often asking me about some investment advices, and I'm refusing to answer those questions. But even a week ago, I was talking with some girl who is a photographer, and somehow she changed the topic, you know, like, of our conversation from photography to crypto, and she was the person who initiated that, because her sister is some IT manager, and she recently invested in crypto, and yeah, so like, this people start, you know, like, having some kind of thoughts about crypto, being aware that it exists, and it's not very often not only about the price but also about the underlying technology, because people want to understand why this tech is so crazy right now. So I think that has changed this year, that people are trying to find the reasons behind the whole craziness.
What about specifically in the Ethereum universe? So you used to be in the foundation, you know all those people for a long time. What what happened this year in that space specifically?
Okay, so first of all, we've had multiple hacks. We've seen multiple hacks. I mean, we've seen two hacks in party and many others. related with different ICOs. So we've also seen multiple ICOs and people who are never in a space joining this crypto space and starting their own ICO. So ICO became kind of a standard for finding an investment for your startup. Mm. I don't know if it's good because historically, if you're starting a startup, you'd have to have some kind of proof of concept, and with this proof of concept, you are going to investors, and you are trying to convince them that this proof of concept is actually a good idea and then legit. Whereas right now, people are collecting money without having a proof of concept, and they're unproved teams collecting hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they are not incentivized to actually do what they promised to do. So that's
those are the two main problems with this. Is that one is that the due diligence isn't what it is in the traditional VC space. Traditional VCs not only are more critical, but they have experience of seeing like what works and what doesn't work, and a naive investor will say, oh, this is an awesome idea, and have no idea that this has been tried 50 times before and it fails for this or that reason. And on the second note, the incentivizations are wrong. So yeah, like you're saying, they're getting hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars up front, and they don't have to do anything to get, like, they already have that money. It's the Kickstarter model. Like there's no incentivization other than your reputation to actually do anything. And in the traditional VC model, you would have, you know, you don't get all the money on day one. You get payments if you can prove this or that, and like the money comes with strings attached. And having money with no strings attached, I'm skeptical that that's a good thing.
Although on one side, one thing that I have enjoyed seeing this year is like the sort of formula of raising money in startup land has been so documented. The pitch deck, the 10 slider with the like everything is so formulaic, and going to pitch competitions is the most boring thing in the world now because it's just like this repetition of this formula. This year what happened was like nobody's doing pitch decks, everyone has a white paper, which is a little more technical, which is kind of cool. There's a lot of scams and a lot of bullshit white papers out there. But I actually have enjoyed seeing this sort of shifting of the way that people are communicating ideas, the different form, like the different channels that people are using to actually showcase new ideas and share what they want to do and then raise money. I think that's interesting. What I am concerned with is it just switches to a new model that then everybody replicates and it just becomes equally gross and boring and crappy.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's what's happening. But it's also important to keep in mind that very few people actually do raise money on nothing but their slide deck. It certainly happens. It happens more in SF than anywhere else. But like if you wanted to raise money in Sweden, you'd have to have a working business essentially.
Yeah.
And so we're flattening the standards a little bit, where like it's now getting closer across the whole world to what San Francisco funding model is. And also might be good or bad.
I mean, this year we saw some crazy ICOs too. Things that were pretty unexpected. Certain groups raising, I mean, obviously the really, really big ones were raising over 200 million at times, like within a day or sometimes within an hour. And we've heard these stories of like in 17 minutes, we raised X amount of millions. I mean, that's exciting. I wonder, I'm curious to see. I'm excited, actually. This is kind of leading into next year, but I'm excited to see which of those teams deliver, which ones turn out to be the biggest scams in history.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, like, one of the my predictions maybe for 2018 is that we'll see a huge crackdown of ICOs from SEC and other institutions. So So I think we'll see the space being more regulated and people not being so eager to create an ICO.
Yeah, I think that's. I mean, it's inevitable that more regulation will come to this space. So far, I've been reasonably impressed with the SEC's responses, though. They are shutting some things down that are just outright scams. And they're regulating like security, like tokens and whatever. But their latest public statement on this was pretty well balanced, actually. Like they were saying that there's value here. We don't want to shut this down, but we also need to make sure that it stays within bounds of, you know, reasonable expectations. And I mean, I know the regulation in Sweden is very stiff on this, and it's treating everything on the tax level, it's treating everything as securities, and then like on the regulation level, it's basically unregulated still.
I mean, one thing that I actually look forward to in 2018, and I don't know if it's going to happen this year, but is some clarity on that. I think there's a lot of groups that are trying very hard to follow the right rules, but because there are no rules, they're sort of, they could be actually putting themselves or their investors or their, you know, their stakeholders in some sort of danger, and I think they don't want to. I think there actually, there's a lot of groups who have the best of intentions.
I think that in upcoming year, we'll hopefully see like the space regulating itself a bit. So
I think that's a large part of what's needed is self-regulation as well, because you ultimately get down to a point where some of this stuff is literally impossible to regulate by design. Mm-hmm. So if you say, like, if the SEC cracks down on all ICOs, you're not allowed to have an ICO. You just make it anonymously. And there's no way to prevent people from transacting on the Ethereum network. Like, there's literally no way you can prevent that. So how do you try to regulate it? I mean, the regulation has to be aware of this and has to try to fit within that framework, which is why I think no one will try to like really have a hard-nosed crackdown on it, because they realize that ultimately it's a futile attempt.
When you talk about internal sort of self-regulation, are you thinking a little bit along the lines of like governance? Are you thinking along the lines of like how the decisions are made in the community? Or are you just assuming that people and organizations and groups will?
I'm thinking more about a way of about ICOs and the way the money is being collected right now. So I believe that the community will. So first of all, I believe that the people who are doing an ICOs, the KYC process will become more common. So they'll do some kind of verification of the people participating in the ICOs. Second of all, I think we'll see maybe some kind of frameworks for identity. So people who are hosting the ICOs, they will not be totally anonymous. So maybe that's something that UPort could do, or like one of the startups that's working in the identity space. So maybe do some kind of framework which will, credit founders of projects.
The accreditation of the founders. That's interesting. I hadn't actually heard of that.
I think people will get smarter as well. I mean, it's a very new space. Every time someone talks to me about blockchain, I keep reminding people that this is an extremely new space. Even the technology is extremely new, and like we're still working out fundamental kinks that like you can't really deploy a proper application on Ethereum today. So a bunch of these projects that are upcoming, I mean, they're making assumptions that some problems on the foundational level will be solved mm-hmm. by the time they've built something.
Actually a finding this year, which is that a lot of the projects are concepts and they're experiments and they're hypotheticals. And and actually stop me if I'm wrong, but I feel like 2017, we did see the introduction of a lot of the proof of stake protocols. Still some being very theoretical, but I believe that we're also seeing some that are now operational. In 2018, a lot of those hypotheticals of this year will actually come to fruition. We'll start to see them, at least on testnets.
Yeah,
I'm really curious to see.
Yeah, the improvements on the foundational layer, the discussion of them have come a long way in 2017, both like sharding and proof of stake and many other solutions, and like state channels are now at the tip of everyone's tongues, whereas in 2016, people didn't know what state channels were. So I think people are thinking about these foundational concepts, and the thinking has evolved quite a lot. I think 2018 is too early of a time to actually have any of it implemented, but it's certainly where we'll start seeing like proof of concepts of those foundational improvements, like you're saying, on testnets or other.
So I've heard that the Lightning Network is already working on a live Bitcoin network.
I saw that too, yeah.
But I haven't tried it myself. It was just a week ago. Maybe, so I would say that 2016 was like the year of DAO, and 2017 was the year of ICOs, and maybe 2018 will be either the year of state channels or the year of proof of stake. We'll see.
I would love for it to be either of those things, but especially if proof of stake becomes a thing. So, I mean, talking about 2018, I wrote down earlier my top three wishes for 2018. Number one is ParityDB. Mm-hmm. We've seen in the Ethereum community that sync times are atrocious. It takes days to sync nodes. And part of this problem is that the sort of snapshotting and warp sync infrastructure is it's working, but kind of haphazardly, and there's improvements we can make on that. There's improvements that the Geth client can make on that. But sync times are ultimately they're bottlenecked by the database. Hmm. In Parity, we're using RocksDB, and there's tunings that we can do to RocksDB to improve things in the short term. But long term, we really need like an Ethereum-specific database, a database that makes assumptions about the types of reads and writes that a syncing blockchain node will make. And that's what Marek started working on this year. And hopefully it will be integrated into Parity in 2018 and bring 10x improvements. No, I don't know, but hopefully better.
Hopefully. Yes.
I know. So on one other point that I've been hearing a lot about as we round out 2017 and head into 2018 is a bigger emphasis on tooling and setting up a lot of the kind of tests and technologies to be able to catch any of these bugs in advance, especially I think around Solidity. I think there's been a recognition that this language requires, like, there's still a lot of building that needs to happen around it for it to function as it should at this scale. I know that in our office we have some people who are working on developing some of those tools. I've heard about, actually in the community, some other groups who've taken really strong initiatives to start bringing together people around this concept. And I expect to see and hear and read more about that next year, which will be cool.
So you predict that 2018 will be the year of tooling.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we need better tooling, especially for application development. So right now we have Solidity and several tools for Solidity like Truffle or Embark, but we don't, for example, we don't have any formal verification tool for Solidity, and I've heard that there are several teams working on independently on those kind of tools. So I hope like at least one of them will succeed and will make something production ready in upcoming months. And I think it will be a great improvements.
And the hope with this is it, because I think there's a lot of excitement about the space, but every time any of these hiccups happen, anytime there's a hack, anytime there's something that breaks, anytime something gets clogged, I think people realize that it's nascent technology, that there's like a lot of things missing. And then what unfortunately can happen is people can also just totally lose interest. They'll be like, this is bullshit. And I think that's the fear, is like, if things keep breaking, then there's a chance that people just turn their back and it goes into some sort of decentralized winter, some period where we don't trust it anymore. I think this actually leads to another idea that, I mean, 2018, I've heard so many people predict that that's the year when everything crashes. What do you guys think?
I don't know. I mean, so like I said before, everything is still so early technology. Like you were saying, a decentralized winter. Like, I don't necessarily think that's a bad idea. If we can have some time and space to actually work on this stuff and make it better before mass adoption. Like, I don't think we should necessarily push for mass adoption as priority number one right now. I think it's too early. So I don't think things will come crashing down. I think, market corrections and stuff like that will surely happen. But from our point of view, like, we'll keep working on things and we'll keep making things better. And I don't predict that the technology is in any sort of ready shape for mass adoption for like at least another 5 years or something. So it's
but don't you think that's what could bring it down? Because it's people are acting as though it is ready for mass adoption in a way. What about you, Merrick? What do you think? Will there be a crash?
I don't know. I don't know, it was like there's 50% of crash happening, so there will be either a crash or there won't be crash. So
you have a 50-50 odds.
Yeah, I don't know. And I think that the increasing price helps bring new people to the space, but I don't think that the market crashing will discourage people from working on the tech itself. I don't think it will stop the development.
What other, so think again, like let's sort of wrap with a little bit more thought of the whole ecosystem in 2018. What parts of it do you think we could see rising up? What parts of it do you think we could see losing ground?
I think something that will rise up, and I think like 2019 will be the year of interoperability projects like Polkadot and Cosmos and what else. But 2018 will bring proof of concepts for a lot of these things. So I know there's a target to try to get a proof of concept out in 2018 for Polkadot. And like we've been talking about proof of stake and sharding, etc. in 2017, I think we'll be talking a lot about interoperability in 2018 and what we can do with it. So I think that's one of the things that I'm most excited about. And then alongside another, like related to Zcash getting attention in 2017, I think 2018 we'll see more applications of zero knowledge proofs outside of Zcash, and it's something I'm pretty excited for as well.
Yeah, I'm also excited about zero knowledge proofs, but not only about them. I'm excited about bringing signatures. I think this concept is also underestimated right now. Besides that, I think that an upcoming year or two will see WASM getting more attention from crypto space. So in part, we've already started working on WASM interpreter for smart contracts. We are not the only team working on that. I know that there are like several other people working on it in Ethereum space and outside of Ethereum space. So I think that an upcoming year or two we'll also see some WASM-based blockchains, not only Polkadot, getting a lot of attention.
Anna, what's your outlook for 2018? What do you think in broad strokes is gonna be about? Other, like you mentioned tooling, but like in the ecosystem-wide sense, what do you expect?
Well,
I can say this, in 2017, we definitely saw a lot of groups that had previously not been involved in blockchain get into blockchain. A lot of tech people, a lot of startup people started to look towards this space. We saw kind of a free-for-all in terms of the ICOs. We saw a lot of money raised for projects where the information about them is actually kind of dubious, kind of unclear. I see 2018 bringing more people, actually. But I also think there's going to start to be a group of people who really can be identified as experts, as true kind of leaders in the space. I'd like to see a little bit more sophistication on the part of the actual investors and on the part of the projects themselves. I'm personally very excited to see which of the projects, the big projects, will end up delivering this year. And I hope that those that deliver, it's a very like overt delivery, and those that don't, that's also made overt to hopefully help to just educate the community about what this technology actually can do, what it can't do, where the kind of bullshit promises are. I think one of the scarier stories is the company, the iced tea company that changed its name to blockchain. Like, its stock price went up, but there's nothing in it that's actually blockchain related. That's scary. That just shows pure hype, pure bubble. I definitely hope that we start to see more sophistication and some people start to be a bit more critical about this stuff. I'm really excited about some of the projects that I've kind of come into contact with this year. And I kind of wanted to ask you about that, if there's anything coming out that's exciting to you. I know, like, what Truebit's doing, when I finally understood what they were doing, I was like, this is really fucking cool. And that's a project that I'm quite interested in. I'm definitely excited, really excited to see Filecoin come out and actually be used. I don't know exactly their timeline, but that would be really exciting to see as well.
I know what you mean. I definitely have like a short list of projects that I'm interested in and I think will bring a bunch of cool stuff to the space, but I'm skeptical that any of them will be able to release anything in 2018.
Are there other projects that you're thinking about that might actually come out in 2018 that would be good to pay attention to?
I think that Omisago is very interesting. Omisago and then Plasma. But I don't know if they can make it in 2018 because there's a lot of new stuff over there.
This is a very common story.
Yeah, there's a lot of new stuff over there and it needs a lot of research and we'll see. But I'm like really interested in Plasma.
I feel like what will probably happen is there'll probably be some like project we kind of know now. Mm-hmm. And we haven't paid much attention to. And somehow, like, this year, it'll just, like, pop up, and it'll be, like, this
that'll be the
paradigm-shifting, yeah. Like...
It would not surprise me. It would not surprise me if that happened. There's so much stuff going on everywhere, and it's impossible to keep an eye on everything. So, like, something coming out of left field is... I mean, it's almost expected.
Do we think we're going to stop using the word blockchain by the end of next year?
Why should we?
I don't think so, no.
Sick of saying it?
I don't know. I actually think it's a bad term because it's... I had someone come up to me once and they were kind of like... they had read some article about blockchain and they just kind of went to me and said, I think I understood it, but let me double check with you. So... it's like a distributed database where you don't really have to trust each node and, you know, you control it by private keys. And they kind of explained the system pretty well. And I said, yeah, that's totally right. You've got it. And then he went, well, why the fuck are you calling it blockchain then? Like, there's no blocks here. What's the chain? And like, what are you talking about with blockchain? And I had to go like, well, it's an implementation level detail like that. It is blocks of transactions that are being chained together with the hash of the block. And it's, well, that's irrelevant. Like that's not like, not, it's not a good model to think about it. Yeah. Cause like it doesn't like decentralized database would be a better way to like for a non-technical person to think about it. So,
and yet I think maybe there needs just doesn't have that ring.
No, and like in this space, it actually means something very different, and so it's sort of like you kind of need one term for a technical person and another term for a non-technical person. And I don't think we've seen any anyone trying to coin that term for the non-technical people that have made sense to me.
I have one friend who actually uses the term Web3 instead of blockchain, really, which is quite cool.
Okay. But I think like Web3, as this expression is way broader than just blockchain.
It encompasses a lot more.
Yeah.
But I think it's a good way to talk about the space in general. Usually people aren't really interested in the blockchain, like in only the blockchain aspect. They're interested in the whole space of what decentralized applications and communication and everything can bring in the future. And then really the term should be Web3.
One last thing going back to 2018 is Constantinople. We didn't really touch on that yet. Do we have any, what's the plan?
Okay, so I think that the plan is to have it as soon as possible. But I don't know when this as soon as possible is. So the last fork before Byzantium was 19 months before. Wow. So I don't think that this set of changes should take us equally long time, but I think if we see Constantinople, we'll see it at the end of the year, not earlier.
Oh, wow.
And the Serenity fork, I think we'll not see it until the end of 2019 or maybe even later, because there are
When does for the proof of stake?
I think it's in Serenity. So I think that we'll see proof of stake not earlier than in 2019 on the Ethereum blockchain. But I may be wrong. We'll see. I'm not working on it. So,
Do you think there will... So the way people are talking about this that I'm hearing is that the Constantinople fork will bring some features that are then necessary in the Serenity fork for proof of stake. So they're kind of like sneaking in some work that needs to be done before the proof of stake thing is enabled.
So I just remembered that, there were so many changes that we wanted to do in Metropolis that at some point people from the foundation decided to split it into two releases, and I think it was a very, very good decision. But I don't know what still needs to be done. I think that part of this work is already done in our Parity client. It's just not active by default because there are no tests for it, but no consensus tests. So the consensus tests are prepared by the Ethereum Foundation and they are run by all clients. But as soon as those tests will be in place, we'll be ready to enable those features.
So something I'm hoping for with the Constantinople fork, and this is a little bit controversial because it's relevant to our Parity multisig wallet issues. I'm not hoping really for a recovery of those funds, but I am hoping for some feature to be able to recover from mistakes. And I don't know what that feature looks like. I can't spec it out and I can't say, it should work like this or that, but something like upgradable contracts where introducing a new opcode for saying this contract is upgradable and therefore you shouldn't trust it more than you trust any other application that you'd allow to change the code. And so, I'm really hoping for something like that because the community needs it. I think the going forward, that's an improvement that will be important and good to have. I'm really, really surprised to see the response to Parity's blog post about wanting some feature like this was so negative. And people are no, we shouldn't have upgradable contracts. We shouldn't have any way to allow people to recover from mistakes. And it's just, to me, it's a weird mentality to bring into an application development framework because there needs to be ways to recover from mistakes. Right. Humans make mistakes. Tooling and auditing and formal verification can all help, but ultimately people will make mistakes. So how do we deal with them? If we don't see any concrete proposal for it, I at least hope that the discussion around this can continue in the community.
Yeah, so I think that the main reason to have this blog post release in the form that we did was to start the actual discussion. What can we do about the problems that exist? And hopefully we'll continue this discussion with the community or members of the community who are willing to talk about those problems, because those problems exist for years right now. And there are hundreds or thousands of Ether locked in various way on Ethereum blockchain. So I think that there are like several things that we could do to prevent some of those losses. Like we could maybe disable suicide opcode, because there is literally no use case for it, because no one is cleaning after his smart contract. Maybe we could also disable creating smart contracts with no code. So basically, this kind of transaction would just fail. Yeah, and there's several other things that we could do, but we need to think about them. And all of these things are just small changes to the protocol. And maybe we could also include them in the upcoming four.
I wanted to say thanks for joining us on this latest Zero Knowledge podcast. Mm-hmm. Looking forward to next year. Excited to see what's coming down the pipeline.
Regardless, it will be exciting. There are no dull moments in the blockchain industry.
Yes.
Cool. So thanks a lot. And thanks for listening.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year.